Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. From Sacramento, our state capital, we have news today about a proposed constitutional amendment to reform Proposition 13. Find out whose taxes may be going up if it passes and how the money would be used on today's show. Hear about a grant that's bringing improved fire safety to rural areas in our county. Plus, if you live in La Mesa, Lemon Grove, or El Cajon, hear why your fire insurance rates will soon be going down. On our Green Scene Report, we'll have details about a petition launched to save El Monte Valley from sand mining. We'll have breaking news about a ruling that will make it easier and cheaper for motorists to fight traffic tickets in court. For sports fans, we'll tell you about efforts to entice the winner of the Triple Crown in horse racing to come to Del Mar. There's a controversy brewing in La Mesa where the city has balked at issuing a permit to run Oktoberfest for a merchants group that owes the city money. But that hasn't stopped the merchants from trying to sell booths for this year's event and try to cut out the Chamber of Commerce from running the most popular attraction, the Beer Garden. Get details on today's show. We have news about a major expansion of the Santa Isabel Preserve in East County that has environmentalists cheering. And then on Crime Beat, hear about a major methamphetamine bust in Pine Valley. On Destination East County, learn about the hottest festivals and events across our region, from an air show at Gillespie Field to a Father's Day brunch with Cowboy Jack coming up in San Diego's East County. On the second half of our show today, we have two newsmaker interviews. Our first is with representatives of the Lionheart Academy, who will be talking about Olympic Day this Saturday in El Cajon. If you've ever wanted to try your hand at fencing or archery, you'll want to stay tuned to hear more about this family-friendly event that's part of over 1,000 events nationwide honoring the spirit of the Olympics. We'll also replay our interview with Karen Toledo from the International Student Exchange, and she'll be talking about opportunities for families to host a foreign exchange student and make a positive difference in a child's life. She'll also tell you about a job opportunity to help place students locally and win a trip to Dublin, Ireland. From Public News Service, hear about lunch programs for low-income kids in California and steps being taken in Sacramento to put a cap on prescription drug costs for consumers. We'll also have news about a new fire station in Boulevard, a missing 10-year-old girl in Encanto, and tips for keeping your pets safe as summer heat arrives. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Since 1978, Proposition 13 has frozen property taxes for California owners until a property sells. But now a proposed constitutional amendment would change Proposition 13 to require annual assessments of large commercial and industrial properties. The measure, Senate Constitutional Amendment No. 5, exempts homeowners, owners of rental residential properties, and agricultural properties, which would not be impacted. The measure also includes a tax break for small businesses, instead targeting larger commercial and industrial property owners for the tax hike. The bill would exempt from taxation up to $500,000 of personal property used exclusively for business purposes. It also gives businesses an exemption of up to $500,000 for equipment and fixtures, an action that would eliminate the tax on equipment and fixtures entirely for 90% of businesses, whether they own or rent their place of business. The authors, Senator Lori Hancock from Berkeley and Holly Mitchell from Los Angeles, estimate the measure would raise $9 billion a year that would be used for education, including elementary schools through community colleges and local governments. We have large corporations and property investors that have used loopholes in the law to avoid paying their fair share, Mitchell said at a news conference this week, KPCC-TV reports. Many commercial and industrial properties are assessed far below market value in California. Since 1978, when Proposition 13 was passed by voters to protect the elderly and other homeowners from skyrocketing taxes, the residential share of total assessed property value statewide has grown from 55% to 72% of the total. But commercial and industrial, along with agricultural, have decreased from 45% to 28% of the total assessed property value. That's because when homes are sold, properties are reassessed to full market value based on the sales price. But many large corporations and wealthy owners have been able to avoid reassessment when commercial or industrial properties sell, taking advantage of complex stock manipulations or other loopholes. For example, the bill's language states a wealthy CEO was able to structure the purchase of a $200 million hotel property in a way that prevented reassessment, avoiding more than $1.1 million a year in local property taxes. The measure would phase in the tax increase, and if a commercial or industrial business owner had property value reassessed by more than 25% increase, the amount above 25% would be exempt from taxation for 5 years, provided certain conditions are met. The authors say the measure is necessary to help California avoid another fiscal crisis and keep money flowing to schools, since temporary tax increases under Proposition 30 expire in a few years. They contend that large corporations and wealthy business owners have been avoiding paying their fair share. But opponents contend the measure would cost the state jobs if companies lay off workers and move elsewhere. John Kupel, president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association, claims California is a high property tax state compared to some other states. Proposition 13 has long been considered the sacred cow in California politics, with politicians averse to attempting to amend what voters approved. But 37 years after its passage, backers of CSA 5 contend it's time to update the measure to reflect changes through the years and the state's current economic conditions. The measure faces tough hurdles to get on the ballot. It must either pass the legislature with a two-thirds majority in both houses, meaning it will need some Republican votes as well as Democrats, or alternatively, supporters must launch a signature-gathering campaign among voters to qualify for the statewide ballot. Backers have said that if SCA 5 fails to win passage in Sacramento, they are already lining up support from labor and progressive organizations for just such an effort. If the legislature doesn't approve the bill, Senator Hancock stated, I think we ought to take it directly to the people. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Eberreno with some good news regarding emergency response times in East County. The San Diego County Board of Supervisors has accepted a donation of $276,000 from the San Diego Regional Fire Foundation to purchase 80 automatic vehicle locators, or AVLs, to equip rural San Diego fire departments. AVL enables dispatchers to see where every fire vehicle is located and send the closest unit to an emergency, no matter which fire department it belongs to. This can significantly reduce response times, potentially saving lives in a medical emergency or keeping a small fire from becoming a major fire. AVL also enables fire commanders to better manage a fire by seeing where all units are located and move them to help save homes as the fire moves and to protect firefighters as winds shift a fire's path. AVL equipment already exists in city fire department apparatus, but most rural areas of the county lack this equipment due to having lower tax revenues caused by a relatively low population in the area. AVL equipment will be provided to 23 fire stations serving East County communities from Boulevard to Lakeside. Tony Mechum, County Fire Chief and Cal Fire Chief, says, "The addition of AVL to our rural fire department vehicles will allow us to track our vehicles in real time, dispatch them to emergencies more effectively, and help get to people who need help much faster." Joan Jones, Executive Director of the Fire Foundation, observes, quote, "Wildfires are more frequent and continue to escalate in severity in San Diego County. The Fire Foundation is very pleased to partner with the County of San Diego, the San Diego County Fire Authority, CAL FIRE, and SDG&E to provide this crucial equipment that will reduce response times to fires, medical or rescue calls, and other emergencies." This is the second substantial grant SDG&E has provided to purchase AVL equipment for San Diego County over the past year. This grant brings SDG&E's support of this program to $376,000. Steve Davis, President and Chief Operating Officer of SDG&E, called the latest grant another step forward at improving public safety by helping to enable rural fire department vehicles with modern GPS technology. The San Diego Regional Fire Foundation was formed in 1989 to improve the system of fire and emergency services in San Diego County. It has provided $5 million for first responder equipment and training, and works to increase public awareness and facilities cooperation between cities, fire departments, county agencies, corporations, and other foundations on public safety issues.
If you live in the cities of El Cajon, La Mesa, or Lemon Grove, your fire insurance rates will soon be going down. That's because Heartland Fire and Rescue, which provides firefighting services for all three cities, has received a Class 1 rating from the Insurance Services Office, or ISO. The ISO rates 47,000 fire departments across the United States, and of those, only 98 have attained a Class 1 rating, including just 8 fire districts in the entire state of California. According to Stephanie Roskonski from the ISO, Class 1 communities are very rare, and some of these scores are the highest we've ever seen. She notes less than 1 in 500 of all agencies rated attained a Class 1 rating. Heartland Fire and Rescue Chief Rick Seda made the announcement at Tuesday's El Cajon City Council meeting. "This is an exciting day for us," he said. The ISO surveys fire departments on overall fire suppression service, looking at a variety of factors including water availability, equipment, deployment, training, personnel, and risk reduction. Districts are ranked 1 through 10 with a Class 1 rating presented only to those districts that score 90 or higher out of a possible 100 points. The rating takes effect September 1st. According to Roskonski, homeowners in the Heartland Fire District should see their fire insurance policy rates drop by 5%. For commercial business property owners, rates should drop 5 to 15% depending on several other factors. The rating validates the recent decision by the cities of La Mesa, El Cajon, and Lemon Grove to consolidate their firefighting services under the Heartland Fire and Rescue District. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells praised Heartland Fire for its success. The mayor told Chief Seda, "Please tell all the men and women you work with how proud we all are of you." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Joanne Armstrong.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Lakeside residents have launched an online petition asking Bill Horn, chair of the Board of Supervisors, to save El Monte Valley from a proposed sand mining project. You can view the petition at our website at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Scene section. The petition describes El Monte Valley as one of the treasures of San Diego County, long envisioned to be the crown jewel in a 52-mile San Diego River Park slated to run from the mountains to the sea. The valley has been designated a scenic view corridor by the County of San Diego, but the proposed 565-acre sand mining project would decimate the valley. Sand mining there would also threaten to pollute the third-largest aquifer in our region at a time when our area needs more water, not less, amid the worst drought in memory. Sands in El Monte Valley harbor potentially lethal valley fever spores, which can be inhaled when soil is disturbed, spores that could be carried in sand loads slated for use in road projects countywide, potentially spreading the dreaded disease across our region. Mining would require up to 250 truckloads a day, 5 days a week, for at least 15 years. This valley has over 100 equestrian-based businesses that could be negatively impacted, plus residents who cherish their peaceful rural lifestyle. The sand mining would lower the valley by 30 feet overall and up to 90 feet at the deepest point, forever changing the terrain and habitat as well. At a recent Lakeside Planning Group meeting, 145 residents came to oppose the project, with only the developer testifying in support. The group behind the project, ironically named the El Monte Nature Preserve, LLC, claims the project is needed to meet our region's needs for aggregate sand for highways and other road projects. The project also stands to benefit the developer financially and bring revenues to the county as well. The developers have promised to restore the valley after mining operations are finished, 15 years from now or maybe longer, since mining projects often seek to renew and extend applications to operate for decades. But environmentalists opposed to the project say that you can never truly restore the devastation that's planned. Supporters of the petition say that they need the help of San Diego residents to stop this project, since environmentally destructive projects opposed by East County communities have often been passed by a majority of supervisors who don't live in the impacted district and who outvote East County's own supervisor, Diane Jacob. Residents here hope to see people countywide speak out to let their supervisors know that they care about El Monte Valley too, in hopes that the safety of residents, water supplies, wildlife habitat, and scenic beauty here can be preserved. The petition to save El Monte Valley has attracted over 1,000 signatures in its first 48 hours, and you can find the petition or sign it at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Scene section.
If you got a traffic ticket in California, here's some good news. Courts can no longer make you pay bail in order to challenge the ticket. There's a catch, though. You have to show up at the arraignment to ask for a trial. The change, an emergency rule adopted by the Judicial Council, which oversees the state's courts, is effective immediately. The American Civil Liberties Union has contended that requiring bail before a hearing violates constitutional protections of due process and equal protection. In other kinds of cases, bail is only supposed to be charged if the defendant is deemed a flight risk. But some say the ruling does not go far enough. It will not help the nearly 6 million drivers who already lost their licenses due to an inability to pay bail, which can be hundreds or even thousands of dollars. It won't help those who miss arraignment because they never received a notice in mail, were ill, went to the wrong courthouse, or didn't show up because they have no money. An average traffic fine is now $500. The Los Angeles Times reports and penalties can quadruple that in some jurisdiction. The ACLU has argued that the process has also been discriminatory since people of color are stopped disproportionately for traffic citation over whites. Forcing drivers to post bail was adopted ostensibly to make sure drivers would show up in court for trials and avoid wasting time of court staff and law enforcement officers who are required to show up at such proceedings. Each jurisdiction had its own set of rules, and sometimes those were confusing. In San Diego Superior Court, for instance, drivers had the option to skip arraignment and mail in a request for trial, but only if they paid the ticket in advance. Even if you showed up at arraignment, you could still be required to pay bail before scheduling a trial. So, even if you were innocent, you had no money to pay, and you were treated as though you were guilty in a process that some critics have said amounted to legal extortion. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jawan Armstrong.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The La Mesa Village Merchants Association has begun selling booths for this fall's Oktoberfest, but there's a problem. The city council has not issued a permit to the merchants group, since the merchants still owe the city over $37,000 for last year's event. Last week, the city council sent the merchants back to the drawing board, requiring that they come up with a repayment plan before any new special event application will be processed. But that didn't stop the merchants from emailing all 2014 Oktoberfest vendors soliciting applications and payment for booths at this year's event. The email states, "Even though it was very hot during the day, the event was a great success. We hope you feel the same way and will consider joining us again this year." The city spent money out of its general fund to pay for police, fire, and support services, counting on the merchants to reimburse the city for those costs as agreed upon. Instead, the Merchants Association has admitted that it spent the Oktoberfest revenues to hold a Christmas in the Village event, leaving taxpayers on the hook for its Oktoberfest bills, at least so far. Now, the merchants group wants to collect booth rental fees from vendors charging $500 to $2,100 a spot. The letter to the vendors makes no mention of the debt issues or the council's action to require a debt repayment plan before any new permit will be considered. While the Merchants Association has pulled the permits for the entire event in recent years, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce has operated the beer garden, which was a financial success. La Mesa Chamber of Commerce CEO Mary England said of the merchants group's action, "At the city council meeting when Oktoberfest was discussed, neither permit nor a repayment plan to accompany it has been submitted or approved, so I'm amazed that applications would go out stating date, time, place, and hours of the 2015 Oktoberfest." The Merchants Association email states that they will be running the event by themselves this year, including the large beer garden previously run by the Chamber, and that's despite a disagreement that still has to be worked out between the two organizations over a clause in a memo of understanding that is still in effect. It states, La Mesa Chamber shall have the exclusive first right of refusal to manage and operate the Allison Street Beer Garden for the 2015 La Mesa Oktoberfest. Event coordinator and Merchants Association Executive Director John Vigil offered this explanation. This could be a bust. I may be doing this for nothing. The city may not agree, but it takes time, so I'm still walking forward. He says the merchants will file an application again next week if the city manager and Merchants Association board are able to come to terms. He adds, we're not cashing anybody's check until we do have permission or a permit. It's a very time-consuming thing when you're looking at over 200 vendors. The Oktoberfest event brings 100,000 people or more into the city each year. Vigil says planning is a time-consuming process that requires hiring personnel and security, as well as paying the city for cost recovery for police, fire, and other support provided. City Manager Dave Witt confirmed that the Merchants Association has not submitted a new application per the City Council's instructions, but he said there is a meeting scheduled between the city and the merchants to discuss it. Witt insists that the issues must be resolved, adding, it is a challenging situation, with the clock ticking for sure. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in La Mesa, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Moreno with the Sports Report. Horse racing's Triple Crown has been awarded, and the winner actually won his first race at Del Mar right here in San Diego County, and he may soon be coming back. Track officials at Del Mar have told the Union Tribune that they may increase the prize money for the upcoming Pacific Classic in hopes of enticing the owners of American Pharoah, the winner of this year's Triple Crown, to compete. American Pharoah last weekend made history by becoming the first Triple Crown winner coronated in 37 years, only the 12th horse to achieve the highest honor in the sport. Jockey Victor Espinoza rode American Pharoah to achieve victories in the Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes, and announced he will donate 100% of his winnings from the Triple Crown to a charity battling childhood cancer. Affirmed was the last horse to win the Triple Crown back in 1978. According to the New York Times, there have been 5 presidents, 3 wars, and 3 recessions since the last time a Triple Crown was awarded. 12 horses have had the opportunity to win the Triple Crown since Affirmed took the prize, winning the first 2 races in the series. However, all of them came up 1 victory short, failing to win the Belmont Stakes. American Pharoah had a much easier run than his predecessors, maintaining the lead for most of the race to clock a winning time of 2 minutes and 26.65 seconds. The other horses never came closer than a few lengths behind. Whether we will see another Triple Crown winner in the near future is a mystery, but after 37 years, American Pharoah certainly made it a very special day for sports fans.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors voted Wednesday to buy 175 acres of environmentally valuable land that will link the east and west portions of the Santa Isabel Preserve and could potentially allow expansion of the Coast to Crest Trail that is envisioned to stretch from Del Mar to Volcan Mountain near Julian. County land use and environmental group officials, in their written report to the board, said the 175 acres contained valuable habitat, including grassland, riparian scrub, forest, and mountain meadows. Supervisor Diane Jacob, whose supervisorial district includes the Santa Isabel Preserve lands, said the property was important for several reasons. In addition to connecting the 2 separate portions of the 5,000-acre Santa Isabel Preserve and allowing the possible expansion of the Coast to Crest Trail, Jacob said the land also included important habitat for the county's multiple species conservation program and could provide important access for the county's proposed $7.1 million Santa Isabel Nature Center. Jacob called the acquisition a significant asset, not just for East County, but for the entire region. The county's Department of Parks and Recreation created the Santa Isabel Preserve in 2001 by acquiring 5,322 acres from the Nature Conservancy. The preserve was made up of 2 sections separated by private properties. And then in 2010, the Nature Conservancy donated another 84 acres to the Parks Department for a future nature center.
This is Ed Barreno with a Crime Beat Report. U.S. Border Patrol agents arrested a man at the Interstate 8 checkpoint in Pine Valley on Sunday evening, finding over $330,000 worth of methamphetamine hidden inside the undercarriage of his Ford Ranger pickup truck. As the vehicle approached the checkpoint, a canine dog team alerted to the vehicle. Agents referred the driver to secondary inspection for further examination and found 25 cellophane-wrapped bundles containing over 33 pounds of methamphetamine stashed in a hidden compartment added underneath the front seats. Agents arrested the driver and turned him over to the Drug Enforcement Administration along with the narcotics. The vehicle was seized by the U.S. Border Patrol. During the last fiscal year, agents in the San Diego area have intercepted 1,797 pounds of methamphetamine, mostly at checkpoints. You can report suspicious activity to the U.S. Border Patrol in San Diego County by calling 619-498-9900.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson
and Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Ed Barrena, guest hosting Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes an Olympic Day, dancing, live music, film showings, fishing, classic cruising, and more. Plus, we'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including Boars and Brew, Blues and Jazz, a vintage train ride, a Father's Day brunch with Cowboy Jack, and a desert sky photo shoot starring the Milky Way. So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
The spirit of the Olympics rolls into El Cajon this Saturday, June 13th. Olympic Day will be held 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Lionheart Academy, located at 1331 North Cuyamaca Street. This free event is one of over 1,100 events nationwide promoted by the Olympic Organizing Committee this month to inspire youngsters to lead healthy, active lives and promote the ideals of the Olympics movement. Olympic Day in El Cajon will feature family-friendly activities including fencing and archery challenges, fitness activities, and more, all focused on Olympic values and ideals such as fair play, perseverance, respect, and sportsmanship. For more information, visit www.lionheartfencingacademy.com.
Julian, Sons of the American Legion invite you to the annual Julian Dance and Backcountry Barbecue on Saturday, June 13th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. The event will be held at Mangini Winery and will feature three live bands. Food, beer, wine, and soft drinks will be on sale separately. For tickets, visit juliandance.org.
The San Diego Concert Band will be featured performers at La Mesa's Sundays at 6 concert on Sunday, June 14th from 6 to 7 p.m. in Harry Griffith Park. The band, which is played here every year, will perform a summer theme revolving around historic celebrations, the ending of the Civil War 150 years ago, and World War II 70 years ago.
The Lemon Grove Library will host Film Night on Wednesday, June 17th at 6:30 p.m., these free showings will feature episodes of The Shortlist, a groundbreaking weekly TV series showcasing outstanding short films from around the world. The library is located at 3001 School Lane in Lemon Grove.
Cajon Classic Cruises rolls out a military tribute this Wednesday night, June 17th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the corner of Main Street and Magnolia in downtown El Cajon. For more information on this free event, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Santee Lakes invites you to drop a line for night fishing on Thursday, June 18th from 5 to 11:30 p.m. Bring a lantern, but no radios, please, to keep the lake quiet for the best fishing. For details, see santeelakes.com. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Lakeside's River Park Conservancy's first-ever Boars and Brew event is scheduled for Saturday, June 20th on the summer solstice. You're invited for a beer stroll along the section of the San Diego River Trail that the Conservancy manages for an evening full of beer tasting and food. The event will begin at 4 p.m. and last until 8 p.m. or until the Boars and Brew run out. To purchase tickets or a designated driver, you can visit boarsandbrew.weebly.com.
The award-winning blues and jazz combo, Robin Henkel and Caleb Fergatch, will be performing live at Winola Pizza Friday evening, June 19th from 6 to 9 p.m. Winola Pizza is located at 4355 Highway 78 in the Big Red Barn in Julian.
Airshow San Diego will take to the skies over Gillespie Field in El Cajon June 20th and 21st. This year's Air Show San Diego, formerly known as Wings Over Gillespie, will feature a representative collection of aircraft and acts to support the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. A mock battle with pyrotechnic special effects will be held both days. Gates open at 9 a.m. For ticket information and details, visit the Air Group One website at www.ag1.caf.org.
The 17th Annual Blues Bash will be held at Mangini Winery in Julian on Saturday, June 20th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Music Fest will include Jonathan Boogie Long and the Blues Revolution from Louisiana, crowned King of the Blues by Guitar Center. The event also features wine tasting and dancing. For more information or tickets, you can visit julianca.com.
Enjoy San Diego's beautiful backcountry mountains on the last vintage train ride of the season, departing from Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Campo Depot on Saturday, June 20th at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. for a scenic 12-mile journey and museum tour. For ticket information and reservations, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
Famous night sky photographer Dennis Mamana invites you to shoot the Milky Way during a night sky photography workshop June 20th and 21st in Borrego Springs. As an added bonus, participants are also invited to join in a desert sky shoot, capturing the beauty of the Anza Borrego Desert and the astronomical wonders in the sky above. For reservations and details, visit DennisMamana.com, and that's spelled M-A-M-M-A-N-A.
Pine Hills Lodge in Julian is hosting a Father's Day brunch on Sunday, June 21st from 9 a.m. to noon with Cowboy Jack singing traditional country music from Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, and more, along with acoustic guitar and harmonica. Cowboy Jack Johnson is the lead singer from The Hank Show, The Band in Black, and he is the singing cowboy for Rawhide Ranch in Bonsall, California. For tickets, visit pinehillslodge.com. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is now the most read feature on our website. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. The spirit of the Olympic movement is going to be rolling into El Cajon this weekend as Lionheart Academy hosts a celebration called Olympic Day for the community, and it's one of over 1,100 such events being held around the nation. Today I'm here with Juwan Armstrong, a student volunteer, and we're going to be interviewing, as our very special guest, Stu Lee, who is the owner, president, and fencing maestro at Lionheart Academy, and Lee Taylor, who is the office manager and the head archery instructor. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Miriam.
So, can you tell me a little bit, how did Lionheart Academy get started?
I started Lionheart Academy in La Mesa about 3.5 years ago. I had just received my fencing master's certificate. Before that, I was the head coach at UCSD. They have an NCAA program, fencing program for both men and women there. And I had been teaching at UCSD and around San Diego. And finally, when I left UCSD, decided to open my own studio, and the La Mesa location was the first one. And since then, we've moved to El Cajon.
Very good. Tell me how Olympic Day got started and what's it all about.
Well, the U.S. Olympic Committee requested hosts throughout the nation because they are hoping to make the public aware of the commitment that our Olympic athletes are involved in and their daily commitment to working out, improving their skills, and being representatives of the United States when it comes time for the Olympics. So although this is not an Olympic year, the USOC wants the citizens of the country to recognize the importance of being fit, being respectful while you perform in athletic events, and the commitment that our athletes make on a daily basis, even when it's not an Olympic year.
Where and when will Olympic Day be held in El Cajon?
This Saturday, June 13th, Lionheart Academy at 1331 North Cuyamaca Street in El Cajon will be hosting an Olympic Day that's open to the entire community of all ages, and the events will take place from 11 until 1 in the afternoon.
I understand this event is free and open to the public. What can people expect if they come?
Well, first of all, they're going to get a chance to try their hand at archery, so they'll be able to shoot an actual bow at a target. We'll have a fencing skill test, but not fencing each other, but hitting a pad. And a variety of activities that we use to cross-train our athletes. We have some eye-hand coordination events, jumping rope,
hula hoops, relay,
and an Olympic trivia contest also.
Well, that sounds like fun, something for everybody in the family to join in and have some fun with.
So how popular and how competitive are fencing and archery?
Well, they're certainly among the fringe sports. They're not mainstream sports. I guess that's part of the appeal. Most of the people that come into fencing or archery are people who have tried basketball, baseball, soccer, and it just wasn't for them. There are definite upsides to that. Archery and fencing both are NCAA sports, and they're both very good sports for scholarships into NCAA programs.
Ah, well, that's a good tip. And I understand that it's particularly good for women in terms of the number of scholarships available. Is that right?
That's right. Fencing scholarships for women are among the highest opportunity sports in the NCAA.
And since fencing and archery both have sharp objects being used in the sports, are they safe?
That they're unsafe is a misconception. Actually, the U.S. Olympic Committee did a recent study, and archery and fencing are among the safest of all sports. Archery is slightly safer than fencing, and fencing, I think, was third from the bottom for danger in sports. It's an extremely safe sport due to the equipment that we use.
Very interesting. Yeah, they put those little tips or guards on the end, so it's not really that sharp point.
That's right, and we wear steel masks and a lot of personal protective equipment in our training.
Well, it's very reassuring for parents and students both. Which San Diego colleges and universities offer majors or competitive fencing and archery?
Well, UCSD is the only university, local university, that has an NCAA program for both men and women in fencing. And there is no NCAA archery program in San Diego. But there are fencing clubs and archery clubs at almost every university in town.
So, Stu, can you tell me how did you get into fencing?
I actually started fencing when I was 18 years old at the University of Alaska Anchorage. I took a rec class in fencing, and I never stopped. I moved to San Diego, started studying with a fencing master, and now I am a fencing master myself.
Excellent. Lee, can you give us some details about your archery program?
Yes, the archery program, we offer classes. We also have open range time. We have all the necessary equipment to loan new archers. On our staff, we have a world-renowned competitor by the name of Joseph Fanchin. He did train at the U.S. Olympic Training Center, and he teaches our higher-level classes. There are two other instructors, myself included, that teach the introductory and beginning level archery classes. Anyone from the age of 10 on up can participate. And one of the first things we do is orient everyone to range safety and archery etiquette. It's so popular right now because of all the current movies and TV shows and such that the youngsters are really clamoring for a place to learn.
So what age groups do you accept at the Academy for fencing and archery?
Archery, we start at 10 years old, and that's because of the size of the bow. The bows are rather hard to pull for a younger person. But fencing, we start as young as 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I should clarify, because there are some youngsters under the age of 10 that already have their own recurve bows. And if they are a lighter poundage and they are able to pull their own bow, they're more than welcome to the class. It's just the equipment that we have to give the new students that don't have equipment would require the strength of a 10-year-old on up.
Very good. So can you tell us some of the success stories among your students?
I have a couple of very outstanding students in fencing. The fencing program is a little bit older than our archery program. We just started the archery program. But in fencing, I have a couple athletes, one fellow by the name of Dylan Cook, who competed as a 16-year-old last year and competed on the international level. He went to Europe for 3 events, each event having over 200 athletes. He took 3rd place in one, 10th in another, 30th in another. So I think he's ranked 17th in the European cadet circuit right now, which is quite an accomplishment for a young man like that.
Oh, very impressive.
And I have a young lady, too, a 12-year-old, whose name is Emma Cola. And Emma is among the best in her age group in the nation. I think she's ranked 20th in the nation right now as a 12-year-old.
Good for her.
It's really impressive.
I understand that you also do some school programs and so forth. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. We have fencing programs around the county. We're looking to expand into more programs in both archery and fencing. Listeners at home, if you have a child in an elementary school or a middle school around town that would like to have an archery program or a fencing program come to your after-school activities, we are looking for those opportunities, and we'd love to teach more programs in the area.
And can you tell me a little bit about your medieval program?
We have, we're very fortunate to have a fellow named Scott Farrell who runs an educational program about medieval life. The program's called Chivalry Today, and Scott offers medieval weapons training and education about medieval times at our academy on Thursday afternoons. And it's a fantastic program. The kids really love learning about those times and getting to swing big swords. They're rubber with a fiberglass insert, but very safe, but realistic feeling and looking. And the kids just love it. And we have an adult program there too. So, college age and up can practice actual realistic fighting styles from medieval times.
Wonderful. So you're really helping to bring history to life, literally there.
That's right.
Yes.
So where can people get more information?
They can come to our website, which is lionheart-academy.com. They can also give us a call at 619-462-2027, and we will be happy to answer all of their questions and give them more information about Olympic Day and our continuing programs.
Excellent. And we will also have information about the Olympic Day this Saturday up on our calendar and in our festivals and events section at eastcountymagazine.org. Do you have any final thoughts to share with our listeners today?
Well, just that the day is really meant to be for the whole family. Everyone from 6 years old to 80 years old, welcome to come on down and try their hand at whatever activity we have going on at the moment and enter the contest. At the end of the day, we'll have a winner of the overall highest skilled person that took place in the events, and we're really looking forward to a good time.
Very cool. I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you so much for having us, Miriam.
Thank you very much.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Karen Toledo. Karen is the assistant manager with the International Student Exchange. That's the organization that helps place foreign exchange students with families here in our region and actually, I guess, across the nation?
Yes.
Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Tell us where the exchange students come from. How many different countries are you working with?
ISE works with 25 different countries. The majority of our kids are from Germany, Brazil, but we also have Italians, Czech Republic, Danish, Finnish, Swedish, Thai, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese. We have many kids to choose, and they're from 15 to 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They attend the local high school. They will come and stay with the host family for 5 to 10 months, depending mm-hmm. on the family's want.
You are a nonprofit, a 501c. How many years
yes.
has the ISE been around?
Since 1982. They were founded in Northern California.
It has a very good reputation.
Yes.
Now, I know that families don't get paid any sort of monetary gain or anything for taking in a student. It's something people really sort of do for the love of the cultural exchange and the opportunities. But tell us a little bit about what is expected of the family. What are they supposed to provide? What do the students provide for themselves? And what are some of the benefits, the non-monetary benefits that families can receive?
Families provide room and board. The expense is minimal. The mm-hmm. families do, the natural parents give their child at least $300 a month for excess costs such as sporting events, social events. But you provide them food to eat and a home to live in. You can take them places, but the student would pay their own way.
Yeah, so that's kind of optional.
That's optional.
That you do.
And then ISE also provides several trips that the kids could go to if mm-hmm. the families aren't able to take them somewhere.
Now, can you be selective about this if you're really interested in having somebody from a particular part of the world where maybe you have a cultural interest or just an interest in learning more about it, or if you prefer to have a boy or a girl or a certain
yes,
age?
Yes, the families, they actually, what we do is once we receive an application in our company, we will go out and talk with the family. We find out what the family likes, what their kids enjoy doing. And then with that, I will let them choose maybe 5 students mm-hmm. and or I will show them 5 students, and then they can choose which student they want. And
nice.
It could be various countries too. Let's say they want a 15-year-old soccer player, boy mm-hmm. or girl. Then I go and I look for a 15-year-old soccer player. And then that's how I would show the student to the family.
Very, very interesting. I imagine it's a way to learn all about the culture in a different part of the world.
Yes.
It just seems like it would be fascinating.
I've hosted almost 100 kids in the last 20 years that I've been in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And
personally
when I personally
at your own house?
Yes.
Wow.
I was hosting 2 at a time. So that I'm a single mom. I was hosting 2 at a time. So
how wonderful.
The costs aren't that high if mm-hmm. a single mom can do it.
Do you form long-lasting friendships? Have you ever traveled or visited any of
yes,
the kids you hosted?
Yes, I have a very good friend in Germany. I have good friends in Brazil. I have good friends in Denmark, Spain. I've traveled to many of their homes, and I've stayed with them. And they actually get insulted if I don't stay with them. This summer, I'm going to a wedding of a student that I hosted in 2006. He wants me to come, and so he made sure that I was going to be there.
What a wonderful opportunity. Having mm-hmm. just traveled internationally,
yeah.
I know how expensive that can be for, you know, lodging and tours. Of
mm-hmm.
course, you'd have someone local right there
yes,
who can tell you all about what to see and do.
They actually want you to stay with them. They have it all set up for you, and they treat you so well when you come because they are so thankful that you actually took care of their kids, and their kids had an amazing year.
Marvelous. Now, how difficult is it to place these kids in homes? Do you have enough homes for them right now, or are you
no,
looking?
No, actually, the we place 2,800 kids throughout the United States. In California alone, we only place 100 students.
Wow.
The ratio is very low here in California. And there are amazing families here in California that can host our students and enjoy the students. You know, it's the unknown. Everybody's afraid of the unknown.
And everybody's working three jobs in California.
And you treat these kids like they're your child.
Yeah.
It's an amazing experience.
Now, I understand that you have an opportunity right now for an area representative to help place the kids. If someone out there is looking for some work, what does that entail?
This is supplemental income. They assist me in locating host families and getting the word out to our local families.
Mm-hmm.
It is commission-based. But if you do place so many students, you do get a trip at the end of our placing season.
Oh,
so
my. Where do you get to go?
We're going to Dublin, Ireland this year.
Oh, my.
So you place 7 kids, you get to go to Dublin, Ireland.
I want to do that. How fun.
So it's a great opportunity for hosting, being an area rep. It's a passion that I have, and I've had for many, many years.
I can see you just love what you're doing. Now, what about students out there, high school students, who may want to become an exchange student with a family in another part of the world? Do you help place them?
Yes, we do. We work with 5 different countries, to say, name a few: Spain, Germany, France, Switzerland. And then we also can do an independent study if a student wants to go to a country we don't sponsor, mm-hmm. but we have reps out there that can take care of them. And they do the same thing that we're doing here, but over there.
Very nice.
They make sure the students are fine and the house is good. What I always tell our families, if you're not sure you want to send your kid to a stranger,
mm-hmm.
host a student where your child wants to go, and then send your student to the student you just hosted family. So you're actually doing an inner exchange.
Yeah, that's a very good
idea.
And
that way you feel safe with your child in a family you already know.
Yeah, I know when I was in high school, I knew mm-hmm. people who were exchange students. I know people who hosted exchange students, and they all had just nothing but positive things to say about what a marvelous experience it was overall. So if people want to find out more about the International Student Exchange, or the ISE, if they're interested in being a host family, being an exchange student, or perhaps looking into that area rep opportunity,
mm-hmm.
how do they reach you, Karen?
They can reach me on my 800 number, which is 844-723-7403, or they can go to our website at iseusa.org.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
Nearly 1 in 5 low-income California kids gets free meals in the summer, a better rate than the 1 in 6 who receive summer lunches nationally. That's according to a new report from the nonprofit Food Research and Action Center that finds that 80% of students who normally receive free or reduced-priced lunches during the school year are missing out on summer offerings. Patrice Chamberlain at the California Summer Meal Coalition at the Institute for Local Government says it's a problem of access.
There's a real need for greater awareness and greater support from school district and community leaders to help make sure that these sites are available and that families know about them.
The number of California families using the summer lunch program has gone up for each of the past 2 years. Chamberlain says that's partly because more communities are getting involved and partly because the drought has led to greater poverty among farm worker families.
There's a real human impact to the drought. Parents are either losing jobs entirely or they're working fewer hours or having to work multiple jobs. So families are having to rely more heavily on food assistance programs.
Child nutrition programs are set to be reauthorized by Congress in the fall. The Food Research and Action Center is pushing to expand the number of communities eligible for food assistance and change the rules to allow sites to serve 3 meals a day instead of 2. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Californians could be paying a lot less for prescription drugs if a bill just passed by the State Assembly makes it past the Senate and the governor. AB 339 would put a monthly cap of about $275 on the cost of a 30-day prescription and prevent insurance companies from putting all the drugs for any one condition on the highest tier of cost sharing. Advocate Anthony Wright from the nonprofit Health Access, which sponsored the bill, says people with insurance shouldn't be bankrupted by high copays.
People with certain conditions, whether it be MS or HIV or Hep C, find that the drugs are literally costing hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a month in cost sharing.
Opponents say insurance companies will simply raise premiums to make up the lost revenue. Wright says the reforms are necessary and reasonable.
The insurers have largely agreed to many of these protections in the Covered California negotiations, so we think that these are appropriate to be extended to the millions of Californians not in Covered California. And employer-based coverage or getting covered through other means.
A similar bill passed the state assembly last year, but stalled in the state Senate. Governor Jerry Brown has not taken a position on the bill. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A brand new fire station is now open in Boulevard. The $3.5 million, 8,000-square-foot facility replaces an older station across the street. Capable of housing up to six vehicles, the new fire station is the first to house County Fire Authority's services along with Cal Fire firefighters and a paramedic unit under one roof. Supervisor Diane Jacob, who led efforts to secure funding, was on site for a ribbon cutting last week, along with Boulevard Planning Group Chair Donna Tisdale, Cal Fire Chief Tony Meacham, and other local dignitaries. An East County Magazine investigation in 2013 found Boulevard's fire station was closed nearly every day for 3 months due to a shortage of volunteer firefighters and funds. Our report led to allocation of emergency funds to help reopen and staff the station, which has now transitioned to become part of the County Fire Authority. Supervisor Jacob called the new station a huge improvement to public safety for our region. In addition to serving residents, the station's firefighters and paramedics also respond to help motorists when accidents occur along I-8 and other highways in this rural area of East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
San Diego police seek help to find Isabella Keating, a 10-year-old girl who disappeared after leaving Horton Elementary School on Wednesday, June 3rd, around 2 p.m. She has not been seen since then. The school is located at 5050 Guymon Street in the Euclid area. Isabella was last seen wearing a lime green shirt and black tights. She is white with brown shoulder-length hair and blue eyes, approximately 4 feet tall, and she weighs 90 pounds. Her foster parent told police that she has run away in the past but normally returns home just hours later, or she's been found promptly and brought home. If you see her or know where she is, please contact the San Diego Police Department at 619-531-2000, and you can see a photo of Isabella Keating on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in our news section.
This is Carrie Hyatt reporting for the East County Magazine and KNSJ. Summertime is here, and the county's Department of Animal Services wants to remind everyone that these hot days can pose a danger to your pets. Animals can be very sensitive to high heat, said Don Danielson, Director of Animal Services. Here are some tips to keep your pet safe and comfortable during hot weather. Be sure your pet has shade all day. Remember, the sun's position changes during the day. Keep your pets indoors if the temperature is lower inside. Keep your pet's water supply in a tip-proof container, always topped off, and be sure it is cool. Pets will not drink water that is too hot. Consider a misting system to keep the outdoor areas cooler. A car can heat up very quickly on an 85-degree day. A car can reach 102 degrees in 10 minutes and soar upward to 120 degrees, even with the windows down an inch or two. So never leave your pet unattended in the car. If you exercise with your dog, do so only in the very early morning when the temperature is lower. Don't take dogs on extreme hikes in the heat, since many dogs have perished in hot weather on local trails. Don't take your dogs for walks on the hot pavement. If it is too hot for you to walk barefoot, then don't make your dogs do it either, since this can burn the pads of their feet. Consider adding a child's wading pool for your dog. Many dogs will keep cool by taking a dip. Following these tips can keep your pet safe and healthy. If you see a pet that is in immediate threat of death or injury, call the department's emergency number at 619-236-2341. For non-emergencies, call 619-767-2675.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery.
We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.